welcome to Questcast, your weekly adventure through games. This week we'll be covering some good topics from No Man's Sky to people getting employed back at Valve, which maybe means good things, but we've learned from our past. This week we've got Cinebay with us. Caitlin's also here, so this will be the first time we're doing a three-person Questcast. Yeah, I'm pretty excited. Let's get straight into the first topic. No Man's Sky. So lots of things have come out about this. My heading here is just the first thing I heard about it. So GOG is offering a 60-day return policy on it in case people are disappointed.
Wow. That is covering some bases.
Yeah. That's just like, look, we know you don't like it. So when you've bought it and realized that, you can return it.
So I'm confused. Yeah. Like, is this like a redone No Man's Sky? Is this new No Man's Sky?
So No Man's Sky have spent the last 2 years patching and creating their new update called Next. It's No Man's Sky Next.
Right.
It promises to have all the things the first one was missing, from multiplayer to, you know, detailed worlds and crafting systems.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've seen, it does have a lot of that stuff, but again, people are left feeling like they didn't deliver. It is a lot better.
Wait, it's already out?
Yep, came out like a week ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And GOG are offering refunds.
Yes.
So everyone's refunding.
We'll see next week what the actual feel about it is. But from what I've heard and seen, a lot of the multiplayer is very like, you know, what you would have expected for the first release. If they spent 2 years making it the game it should be, like the multiplayer should be a lot better.
Mm.
All that, those kind of things. So yeah, jump in. Tell me what everybody thinks.
I don't know. I never played the first one. Well, whatever we're calling it.
I mean, from what I've seen, like a couple of friends had actually played it originally when it was released, and they were sort of like, "Oh yeah, you know, it's okay. Like it's shiny, it's pretty, it's exploration, it's survival, but they just felt like it really didn't have much content to it. Like, yeah, sure, survive and explore, but then what?
Mm.
You know, and it got very repetitive. It is using
my new favorite saying, which is applicable in many places. It is as wide as a mile and about an inch deep.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's like no actual depth.
I believe the saying is.
No. So what happened was I heard the saying, wide as an ocean, deep as a puddle.
Yeah.
For a fantasy game. And then I saw the same exact saying on a space game saying wide as a mile and an inch deep. Because the ocean metaphor probably doesn't work for the space universe as much. So,
well, yeah,
it's a metaphor. But anyway.
Look, all things saying what this is.
Mm.
So.
Not buying it then?
I wasn't going to buy it the first time. I know some people did, and I'm like, why are you buying it? But Sean Murray, the lead developer, I'm not sure if he's just the founder of the company. I'm not actually sure what he does there. Besides make lots of promises. he made lots of promises again. And cool. I was just like, when people were like, oh, you know, he means it this time. I'm like, how do you, like, how does anyone know? It seems like he's doing the same thing again and trying to get lots of money from people.
Yeah, what are you basing that on, actually?
Which, based on the fact that they didn't just give up on the game, I think they are passionate about it. And I will give that to them as developers.
I think they might actually be trying, but
I think they're trying and passionate. I don't know
that they can do what they
are saying. I think they're not good at realistically telling people what's in the game.
Like, or someone at least, hasn't actually played the game and isn't quite aware of what is in it.
At least Sean Murray was not. Yeah. I don't know about the rest of the devs. The other devs are like, dude, stop saying that.
Stop talking.
Yeah. If he's the voice, they could be behind him just like, shut up, someone shut him up.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, well, we can do this, but like better. And they're like, no, we can't, shut up.
They're behind the camera just like with big wide eyes, just like slashing their throats. Doing like, the cut. No, we can't, shut up.
Cut the mic, cut the mic.
Yeah, so I definitely think they're passionate. I just not sure like where they went with all that stuff. I'm not sure why.
I think that's probably the issue, is that while, like, most devs probably have a passion, is that if you've got no direction, like, you're kind of stuffed, really. You know, like, especially if you've got someone that's, like, directing everything, you're like, yeah, do this and then do this. And they're, if they're quite flippant, they're going to be like, well, what the fuck do we work on? I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Like, it's a shame, because when I have seen the gameplay of it, like, it looks like a really chilled out game, like, just something that you'd be like, I just feel like plodding around and, oh no, I'm being attacked. But from the people that have played the new version of it, they've said, like, the content is really pretty much exactly the same. It's just shinier and slightly prettier.
Okay, but so they focused on the wrong thing. It's like they made it graphically better without changing.
Which probably wasn't the thing to do.
Yeah.
This reminds me of, like, what Todd Howard says, because he's always like, the reason we don't announce things like Elder Scrolls 6 or our new games until they're really close to being done, or if we do announce them, we don't announce any features about it, is because, like, so much can change.
Yeah.
And we don't want people to be disappointed in an Elder Scrolls game, because if we say one wrong thing, everyone will be disappointed.
All the backlash.
Like, an Elder Scrolls...
Promise one thing, not deliver.
Especially with an Elder Scrolls game. Like, if you...
Exactly.
You just... You essentially have to just not say anything. It has to come out and people have to discover the features from themselves.
You are, like, treading water in an ocean full of sharks, and you just have to desperately try to act not like a seal.
Because you could be like, yeah, all the doors open inwards and one door opens outwards, and there's just some, like, a mob on the internet.
Yeah, there will be a group that are personally offended by inward opening doors.
And that's a very light example. Like, yeah, so I can see from, like, Todd...
But see, that is an example of, like, a company that has, like, been around and learnt, like, what to announce and what not to announce and how to do it right.
Well, no, they've been around since before, like, this would happen. So they probably learnt the lesson before it ever needed learning.
No, but that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Whereas this is clearly a company that hasn't quite figured that out yet.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah.
Which is terrible.
Who even makes No Man's Sky?
Hello World? I'll look it up.
No, it's just Hello Games.
Hello Games?
Just Hello Games, yeah.
There you go.
It's not a great name. Let's
hi.
Well,
bye.
Now we're shitting all over their game, shitting all over their name.
I think, like, just to close that off, the really and I think the annoying part is that.
Sorry, you go.
GOG are offering the refunds, not the actual developer.
Yeah,
that bothers me quite
it's
a bit.
If you do it within 30 days, it's part of their standard, which the developer doesn't get the money. So I think how they do that is when you buy a game from them, they probably bank that and then pay the developer each month.
After the 30 days.
For the 30 days, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, fair call.
Whereas,
I don't know.
See, I think I'm a bit the same. Like, I think GOG should still get, like, a cut of the money.
Like, yeah. I
think
mean,
the company
the
should be wearing
it,
the refund.
But,
like, GOG should still get their money because they're using their platform, like... You know, they're still providing the service.
They are, but there's probably laws around.
There's probably that.
Around, like, if someone's owned the product for 30 days, they the company that made that product is well within their rights to not offer a refund. GOG's probably doing this out of, like, the customer satisfaction part, knowing that, like, they can't legally tell Hello Games to offer the refund,
actually,
so they're just doing it themselves.
Could, cause I don't know how it exactly works with games, but I'm pretty sure, like, that is the prime time for the company to have to give back a refund.
Games are very different. And
I mean, obviously, if you've played, like, 300 hours of the game, it's different.
Yeah.
We've discussed that before. But, like, if you've played 5 hours and you're within, like, 30 days, I'm pretty sure.
So one of the guys at work, I was he wants me to buy a game, and I was saying, I don't want to buy this game. The top reviews are pretty negative. And he comes up, this is to do with the 300 hours thing. The guy that gave it a negative review had 350 hours. He's just like, what possesses him to negatively, like, surely after, like, 300 hours, you were like, this game's not for me. Even after 20 hours, this game's not for me. Why did he keep playing?
How did you hit hour 100 and decide, two more of this lot of time I have to invest before I make my decision?
It was a good point. I still found it funny.
What was the content of the review, though?
That was the as wide as a mile, deep as an inch.
But
no, it was it actually print really, really far in. It was like a good 10 paragraphs of just.
But is the like what I'm saying is like, was it say to do with an update?
No, no, it was the overall. Because
like that's fair enough then.
So I think it was one of those people with addictive personalities. They said, you know, if you get into this game, it's a really big grind. You won't feel like you're accomplishing much for a lot of it.
Well, he could say that, yeah.
He
spent the time.
Yeah, like, I was like, you know, I trust that person with it. Like, they probably regret that 350 hours. And I feel like if you've regretted that 350 hours, because I've got 500 in Terraria and I don't regret a single hour of it. Whereas I know people that have spent, like, time on Eve and stuff, where they're just like, I wish I didn't do this. Mm. I'm in now, but I wish I didn't.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like, I can't escape. It's got me.
Well, you would have to get to a certain point, because you'd be, like, starting the game and then going, okay, like, where is this going? This must be picking up.
It's especially hard with those games like Eve and Elite Dangerous and stuff, where everyone tells you, oh, you got to like play until you get like the big ship or something. Yeah. And then you get to that and you're like, I still don't enjoy it.
Yeah. And then
I hate all of you.
By that point, you've like, it's one of those like, what are they like, spent losses or what's it called?
Oh, the, now I can't think of it. I hate you.
Don't look at me.
We can't look at you. But no, it's the sunk loss.
Sunk loss, that's it. Like, he spent so many hours in this game already, and like, he's at obviously at a point where I'm assuming.
Sunk cost, that's what it is. Yeah. Sunk cost fallacy.
Yes. Where he's obviously got to points where there's like, I'm assuming, like daily challenges and quests and things that he's now feeling obligated to log in and do because he's, you know, gotten so far into the game, and the only way to achieve anything in the game is to be doing these things.
Our friend Scott, he was telling me the other day while we were playing Dota, he was saying, I just log into Killing Floor 2 to do the weeklies because I want to get the skins. I'm like, but
you don't play it outside of doing the weeklies.
Yeah, he doesn't play it outside. Yeah. And he was saying, I don't really enjoy it that much anymore. I'm like, why are you doing it?
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's like, I just want to get the skins for a game I don't play.
Yeah, I mean, I did the same with Dota, but I still play Dota. All right, let's move on to something else depressing. FIFA player spends $10,000 on FIFA, out because of GDPR. So essentially a guy, the GDPR came out and he wanted to find all the information that I assume EA had on him, because you're within your rights to do that. So they had to send him all the information and he saw, I've spent $10,000 on this game.
Oh, so it was obviously just like a summary of over the time he had the game, he has spent $10,000 on it.
Yep.
Okay.
So it's not like $10,000 to spend on games.
No, like he's been playing this game for years. He wanted to get all of his data that they had on him.
All the years he spent $10,000.
Yep.
Imagine. Yeah, see, though, there are some figures that you just don't want added up.
Yep.
And that is one of them.
Can you, either of you guess how much I've spent on Dota?
I don't want to know.
Because Steam updated it so I can look at that.
And did you?
I did. Me and Sam both did. I have spent $600.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's not 10,000.
But if I keep playing, it'll get there.
I mean, it depends. How many years has this guy been playing FIFA for?
I'm actually just reading a bit further on, is that he's been playing for a while, but this $10,000 was accumulated between FIFA 17 and FIFA 18, spread across 2 years.
Oh, okay.
So it's not like, you know, FIFA 11 through FIFA 18. It's literally like it's two games, 10 grand.
Did like, yeah. I'm pretty sure it was only like FIFA 16 something that introduced microtransactions.
Well, that's it. Like,
the other ones didn't because it wasn't a fad, right?
Okay, what do you microtransaction on FIFA?
People buy players and, like, player cards in it.
Right.
I do not understand it. So it's
like glorified people trading.
Yeah, it's really? Basically
buying people.
So
okay, so just going to put it out there, it's EA. Do I need to say any more about microtransactions?
Yeah, but like, you can make the worst system in the world. It can still amaze me that people will be like, all right, I'll get on board.
$10,000, sure thing.
Got 10,
like
10K.
How much? So for $10,000 over 2 years, how like much is a microtransaction? Like, how much is a person to purchase?
From what I think it's like $5. You get, and it's random. It's not. It's not
So yeah, I think so it's like a loot box.
Okay, so now I'm starting to see how it happened.
Yeah, so you get a set of player cards, and don't quote me on this. I think you can get a rare version of that same player that's a bit better.
Like a golden boss.
Yeah,
card.
Better stats.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like it's very much they've just turned FIFA into a trading card game.
Yeah, that's interesting.
With a meta game in between of the actual soccer game.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
If you're not opening loot boxes.
I bet there's people that don't even play that part. I bet they just want to get the cards and do like the trading and stuff like that.
I just don't understand how. I mean, you can't really notice like 10 grand. I mean, it does say that, you know, I've got a healthy enough income that it doesn't bother me and I don't have to worry about it. But at the same time, like just casually throwing money away like that and then being surprised at 10 grand. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just weird. Like, I don't understand.
What 10 grand? Yep.
Over 104 weeks.
104
days.
104 days.
Wait, fucking how? No, it's 54. Yeah, 104 weeks.
104 weeks. So that's about 10 grand.
It's $96 a week, $100 a week.
Shit.
Oh, I could do it. I reckon I've got the cash to spend on it.
Who is dropping $100 a week on cards? Oh, man.
I mean, it's a lot of money, but at the same time, I can see, like, if you, let's say you earned. If you're on, like, an 80K figure or something, because you do something mediocrely okay in life, and you have. and you play FIFA a lot. And you do one thing a day, maybe. You're just like, oh, I'll see what I get today. I can see how over a long time you're not realizing.
No, I can't see how you don't go for 1 week, shit, I've spent like $100.
It really depends on how much money you, like, what money is worth to you. Because the more you earn, the less $5 is worth. Because
I was thinking, like, oh, maybe it was, you know, a few, like, $20 transactions here or there that, like, added up. But he'd have to at least be spending, like, $100 a week for that to have added up in that time.
Yeah.
Possibly more a week. Like, maybe he spent less during 1 week but more during another week, which meant, like, that's a much more substantial amount to be forking over in a week.
It is, but again, it depends on how much you earn. Because, like, if you don't have much money, you're like, hey, this costs the same as a meal from Macca's. That's expensive. But on the other end, you could be like, hey, this costs the same as a meal from Macca's. Like, I could get 5 of these.
He obviously did.
And he did. And he probably did it while eating Macca's.
Good God.
Anyway.
I think on the back of that as well, like, given the fact that he requested this information from EA, is he was sort of surprised that it actually had tracked phone calls as well.
Yeah,
so,
I
like,
did
a lot
see
of the data
that
they tracked. Yeah, like, they tracked heaps of stuff, but with the, like, the packs that he bought, it wouldn't actually specify which pack he bought. So, you know, he didn't exactly know how much it cost.
It is anonymized data, though. That would be why.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seems so weird that they'd just be like, oh, yeah, we're just going to keep all this data. We're not going to tell you what's for, what you actually spend it on, apart from, you know, the basic information.
I can,
oh,
from
and we're
an analytical,
keep your calls for 2 years.
From an analytical point of view, I can see that because they don't care what he buys. They care that he is the type of person that spends money on microtransactions. So for targeting and analytics, that's the type that they want to.
But wouldn't they want to know what specific microtransactions did better than others if they were offering a variety?
That is probably done in a separate analytical data thing because they don't
which
want.
Which would have been.
But they would keep that separate because you want to keep personal information, like your targetable information, separate from others in case things like the GDPR happen because they can keep all the anonymized data about what microtransactions are bought now if it's not connected to the personal. Because if someone asks for their personal to get rid of, they're just like, all right, we'll get rid of that, but we still have all the data on what you as a person bought, but we can't just link it to
we
you as a person.
We can't tell you specifically that you bought it,
so
but we know
that will all be separated with the GDPR now because they want to keep as much as they can legally because they definitely don't want to get fucked over, but they want to keep as much data as they can. Mm. This is probably the only way they can do it.
Yeah.
I heard you want full disclosure. No.
Yeah. God damn. That's disgusting. Speaking of EA... Oh, EA Origin has removed...
Speaking of disgusting.
Yeah. They've removed the online house program, but they did it without, like, they didn't make a press release or anything. They're just like, well, press that button, turn it off. No more free games. So if you, I think you logged in every 2 weeks or something, they'd have a different free game. They were usually indie games or old games. It was still a cool system. I got a few things on it. GOG does the similar thing, but GOG's still doing it. So,
because GOG is good.
They're well within their rights to take this away. I think the issue that people have is they did it kind of quietly. They didn't like come out with like a, we can't afford, even though they can.
Yeah.
We can't afford to keep doing this, you know, sales.
Or some sort of like, here's our reasoning for why we didn't.
Yeah. They're just like, oh, I hope no one notices.
Yeah.
Clearly everybody did.
Except yeah, it's like, oh, come to log in to get my friend.
Yeah. It's like, where is it? It was like the new guy on the job. He was just like, how's the internet work? Can I just turn this off? No, no one will make a fuss.
Yeah, I like to think
and
that.
And there's like some boss is just like, yep, no one will make a fuss. Fuck, I'm not getting in trouble for this.
Oh, shit. No, I'm picturing it like a big actual switch, like on the wall, and someone's just accidentally leant on it and turned it off.
Look, if I owned a big company, I'd have to have one of those big buttons or switches for something important.
It'd have to be like, for like launching something, like releasing whatever version of whatever you were doing.
Yeah. I'd love to do that.
And you'd have an end of week or end of sprint, like, release. It'd be fun.
I mean, it's annoying because it's EA and it's Origin and people have, it's been there for a while. Everyone knows they can afford to keep it running. I mean, I think if they had more been like, well, we're running out of content to provide, like for free.
Yeah, because they never did new content, kind of, I'm pretty sure. Because they only have EA stuff on there. I'm pretty sure they don't do third party stuff, and they don't want to put new stuff on there that can still make them good money.
And I think that's probably they're just like, oh, what else can we really put on here that doesn't involve third parties? Mm. And so instead of making an announcement, be like, hey everyone, on this day, like, we're going to shut it all down, like, here's a bunch of free games that we haven't put up before, or even do an archive of the free stuff they have put up before. Yeah, they're just like, shh, just sweep it under the rug. No one's going to notice. Like, it's fine. Hush. Exactly. But, you know, obviously they did have a lot of loyal people that would come back and obviously were, you know, buying stuff regularly.
I'm thinking that it is the case of that as well, that maybe it got a bit too popular and they were, like, people were just downloading the games, like, when it was free and, like, not actually buying any of the other stuff that they had.
Could be.
Yeah. Cost viability, I suppose.
We'll never know what their reasoning is besides money. It's always money.
Money.
I mean, there's definitely money involved, yeah. For sure.
All right. So I don't think any of us have more to say on that besides EA. No one likes them.
I heard like microtransactions in life.
EA, play the person, not the game.
What was that thing that I sent you ages ago? I was like, EA, we'll find some way to fuck it up.
Yeah, that's right.
the EA starting.
Yeah, good times. So let's talk about some games coming out. First one, I guess, Earhart, Tales of Broken Wings. So when I first saw this trailer, I was just like, oh, it's another top-down shoot 'em game. But then it did the whole, like, 3D moving up and down in the world. I was just like, oh, they've actually put, like, a pretty decent spin on it.
Remember you thought, yeah. Well, remember you.
Because, like, the first 10 surprised. Seconds, I'm like, oh, it's one of these, like, top-down, plane, shoot, go-forward games. We've seen this 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
But then it obviously went into the rest of the game where, like, it is over multiple levels and stuff. And I was, you know, I probably still won't play it, but no. I'm interested that they are trying something new. Because I always like when a developer tries something new, even if it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be interested to watch gameplay of it. Like, if someone, you know, was streaming this or did a YouTube review, I'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, I'd probably watch it and be like, but I don't think I would probably actively buy it. Because, as you said, it just looks like your standard top down, and then just adding the function of being able to go vertically, like, is that really all that's different from most of the other games in that genre? Mm. Like, what do they actually do that's really different apart from go vertical?
Exactly. And I'm not saying that's a bad game or anything. It's just not my type of game.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's the same for, like, plane simulators. I do not know how people can stand playing them.
Oh, my Lord.
But there's people that, like, get full rigs and, like, yeah, I'm not an actual pilot, but I can probably fly better than one.
Well, I mean, sure.
But... well, some of those flight simulator games, they actually they're not even games at some point. Like, there's actually ones that are just actually used by airlines and stuff to help train.
Yeah, there
which
are,
is ridiculous.
There are actual, like, simulations for this sort of thing.
Yeah, and people could, actually get those.
That could be, you know, passed off as potentially a game, like, in some ways.
That, I think that's what happens.
But,
do you know that's how Arma started? If anyone's seen the game Arma. There's 1, 2, and 3. So it started as a military simulation thing, and they were like, we could sell it as a game.
Let's make it a game.
And they did really well with it because it has the detail about...
Army tactics and stuff
that things like COD and Battlefield just don't have.
Yeah. Just run and shoot at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like actually if you get, legitimately relies on teamwork.
Yeah, and if you get shot, you're done.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Like, you get but what I like about it is you can get shot in the leg and shit like that, and you can crawl for 30 minutes.
Before you bleed out.
Yeah, you do bleed out in that game. It's pretty in-depth. I'm impressed with it. Played it a few times. It is hard.
Well, yeah. I mean, Army's hard.
Yeah.
War never changes.
Like...
yeah.
It changes but stays the same.
Different people, same shit.
Yeah.
As for Earhart, it's probably... I can imagine it would be great for kids... You know,
yeah,
but
it does look like a simple game. I think it would go really well on the Switch and things like that.
I think I keep forgetting that games can also be for children
There's a lot of things I've seen recently where I'm like, I wouldn't play that, but like I would let my kids play that and I think that'd be good for them.
Yeah, no, I'm just like, this doesn't appeal to me. Make it better.
See, I could see you, if you have kids, you'd be like, play this epic RPG with really adult themes. And they're like, I want to bounce a ball.
Yeah.
No!
Yeah, good God for life.
Slay the wizard. Slay him.
Speaking of games for kids and adult themes, is Digimon Survive a game for people who used to watch Digimon or for, like, kids now?
Depends what you're doing in this game.
I'm actually not happy with it. It's, from what I can see, like, it goes through the Digimon story with, like, turn-based combat and stuff, and I'm like... If I could go through the world and it be kind of like real time, I think that would suit the Digimon thing a lot more. Because Digimon's not about capturing lots of Pokemon Digimon. It's not like Pokemon where you catch lots of Pokemon. You have the one Digimon that you kind of bond with and it follows you around and stuff, right?
Digimon, digital monsters. Yep.
Unless they've changed how Digimon works in the last many years. I haven't watched it.
I can't say I've watched it in a decade, at least.
So, that's my thought on that. I don't think it's a game, I don't think it's a universe that suits turn-based. I'm sure that the mechanics of it will be great, because it looks like it's well-produced. It probably just won't appeal to me.
Fair enough.
I mean... I think, going back to who's it suited for, I mean... Given its turn base, I'd say it'd probably be better for the kids that are just coming into liking Digimon. Because I have no doubt, as you've just said, is that, you know, for the old guard of the Digimon world, is that they'd just be like, what is this? What is this turn based combat? Why? I don't understand.
Kids even like turn based combat? I was fairly certain.
Pokemon's always been turn based combat in all of their games, pretty much.
I think it's a little bit easier for them to.
This is much more in depth than the Pokemon turn based combat, though.
Well, turn based combat in itself, I think, is a little bit easier for children to grasp.
Would you say, like, a Final Fantasy turn based combat is the same, though?
Like, they have time to.
Yeah, work it out.
Like, decide on what they're going to do, figure out which button it's going to be. You know, when something's not, like, smashing them and killing them immediately.
Yeah.
Yep, that's
because you know how children are.
I've seen children play games. I've made children's games. It is a task. Testing them is the worst because you're like, you try and work out how a kid's going to use this block, and you're like, all right, I've tested the all the ways it could do it, and like a kid tests it, and they're like, fling. Oh, didn't think it would go there.
So you just get like a fish and just slap the screen, and that's pretty much how a child's going to use it.
That's basically.
That's how you test for children.
I want to bring out a product now, which is just a finger and like a touchscreen phone, and it just taps it 100 times to test the product.
Yeah. That's all you need to do.
It's like the kidometer.
And right. Like, yeah, various foods in the hand at the same time.
Yeah, can the phone survive an orange juice spill and an apple being smushed into it?
Yeah.
I'd buy that if it survived.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be a good phone these days. There wouldn't be kids involved,
it would just be me.
Yeah, different target audience. Right, so Vampyr is announcing new difficulties coming later this summer. I don't think it has the depth of combat to need new difficulties.
I don't think it has the depth of anything.
Oh, the story's good, as I've said.
So it's a more difficult story, not actually difficult anything.
This is what I'm saying. Like the story, there is no depth in the story. It's go and talk to random people who have random things to say, and you unlock hints about other random stuff. Like,
can a book have a depth of story?
What?
Can books have depth in story?
Well, yeah, that's what they literally are.
But then how can this not? If it's
because there's like, I don't even know at this stage of our playthrough what our greater purpose is.
Finding out who made us.
But, like, we're not doing that.
We're doing what we can. And trying to work out who's messing with you, which, no spoilers, but we found out.
But the depth of your interaction with the townsfolk are like, I'm sick, here's some medicine. I'm sick, here's some medicine.
I think you're super over simplifying it, because like, I do really like the hint system and working out that kind of stuff and who you need to go talk to and stuff. I think it is much better than the standard RPG system.
I don't know.
I mean, especially going from Pillars of Eternity. Put as much text you can on the screen and hopefully someone enjoys it.
I do enjoy visual novels. I really don't. They're boring. I mean, for most games with like new difficulties, if it was like MMORPGs similar to like Diablo or Elder Scrolls, and it's like, we're going to put this on like super extra hard mode, see if you can survive, I'd be like, okay, yeah, cool. But I don't know if things with like an actual like story mode really make much sense to have a harder difficulty. Whether it's like more quests to do, or whether it's like more difficult combat.
From what I understand, right? It's just going to be harder enemies and stuff.
Yeah, but it's all. I don't think it needs it.
I don't think anyone's asking for it.
Yeah.
What I do like with harder difficulties, which I might go back and play Resident Evil 7 because of it, is Silent Hill and Resident Evil games. In the harder difficulties, like they let you start the game again with the same weapons and make it like. So you're actually going through the start of the game with all your end game weapons, but everything's a lot harder.
Mm.
I think that's really interesting. And I think because you start with all your gear, there's different secrets and stuff you can find out because you have the gear
to get through
to do some things in like the start of the game that you couldn't before.
Yeah.
That makes sense, though.
It's very time consuming, but I like that idea of difficulties in those kind of story driven games.
I'm just not a huge carer of difficulties, to be honest.
Yeah, if you're playing a game for the story, like difficulty is
like I want a decent. I just want to play the game as it was intended. Basically, is my stance, and then
that is hard when you've got different people and abilities. Like if it's a game where your stats drive everything, like your stats means you can beat this monster, then that's fine. That's as intended.
See, I'm more of a like this is how they intended it to be played. On like normal difficulty, right?
Yep.
If I'm shit at the game, that's my own fault. Like, I need to get better.
Fair enough.
Kind of thing. Like, I use it as a benchmark of, well, am I getting through this well? Like, I'm not going to go, I don't like doing easy, like, difficulty settings. But equally as much, I don't enjoy doing hard settings because I'm not, like, that's not what I'm there for.
Yeah, that's fair. I completely understand.
Plus, it would also mean, like, redoing and replaying the game, and sometimes it's just not worth it.
I mean, I think it also depends on, like, with if the game actually legitimately has replayability as well. Like, if you've just played through a normal difficulty and you're like, that wasn't really that great, and you're like, oh, I'm going to go play it on the hard mode. Like, is it actually going to get better?
Mm.
You know, and for the better part of things, like, no, when you play a game through and it was difficult enough to start with, you're not going to want to play it through again at a harder difficulty.
No,
it's going to
make it worse.
Yeah, for most games, I would say that. Like, again, it's only things like Resident Evil where they really spent some time on giving you different content for those different difficulties. But, like, 99% of games don't do that. It's just, we'll make the monsters harder.
Mm. And I guess, yeah. Like, what was I going to say?
I don't know.
It had something to do with replaying it. No, I can't remember.
All right. Well, difficulties. They're a thing.
They're difficult.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. I was like, maybe if at a point, like, I really loved a game.
Yep.
And I'd gotten so good at the game that it was no longer a challenge for me on a normal level, maybe I would, like, then look at doing a harder level. But it would have to be a game that I was already, like, completely, like, in love with and loved replaying.
Yeah, that's, yeah. I can see that. Mm. All right, let's move on to PUBG. We haven't talked about PUBG in a while, but they essentially...
Why?
We all love PUBG.
Nobody does.
Yeah, so they're essentially saying no custom servers because they don't want people hacking and doing all that stuff. Everyone seems to think it's more about the money because, like, games like Diablo and stuff, which have been running for 20 years, like, have custom servers and you can just host stuff. So the only way you can get a custom server is if you rent it from their American servers.
Oh, sweet Jesus, come on.
So, like... If you want to make like a server for your clan and only you guys play on it or something, you have to get an American server. If you're an Australian or like someone in China or something, like, you're like, I don't want to, like, me and my friends don't want to play on that ping. That's stupid.
No. I mean, look, I can understand because with most server hosting is that you do have to pay some sort of fee, like Conan Exiles, what else? Minecraft, 7 Days
Minecraft,
to Die.
You don't.
I used to have to.
No, you've always been able to host your own server on Minecraft.
Really?
How much are they charging for it?
I'm not actually sure.
Yeah,
whatever it is,
I'm
it's too much.
Not sure either. But I don't know. Like, I can understand why they would say that, but to not be able to have the ability to pick which server location, I think that's a bit trash. You know, you should be able to have it hosted in wherever the closest point is because they already have servers there. You know,
if you've bought the game, it should cost you no money to be able to host your own multiplayer server. Why?
I do own the game, and that's what annoys me.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah,
the problem with these games is they have official servers and you can't make custom ones. The problem with that is when they've decided we don't want to support this in 4 years, all the people who own the game can't play it anymore. If they allow custom servers, people can keep running servers at their leisure and their own cost.
Maybe is this going to be one of those things that they think about doing down the track when they don't
no,
want to?
No, they never will.
Okay, cool.
No, the main problem I have with this as well is that they're like, oh, you want a server, you pay for it. Okay, fair enough. But the problem is that they can't even get their servers that actually just host the base game sorted to begin with. Like, I follow the Twitter and literally it's crashing literally almost daily.
Maybe that's the reason. I don't want someone with a custom server making like showing them up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it would make sense, but if you can't even stabilize your base game server, how are you really going to go on custom servers, to be honest?
Well,
like,
a custom server is
sense.
Just the same software that the base server uses. They just run up a bunch of servers. Like, it's not as hard as they're making it sound like it is, so they have an excuse to be like, oh, we can't do that.
Because I mean, if you didn't spend all your time suing people, maybe you'd have some decent service.
I'm not happy about US.
Yeah, that's I appreciate funny. That. You know, there's probably a lot of people that don't understand how servers work, but the whole point of these matchmaking servers is that you can literally grab the source code, run it up in a VM somewhere or something like on a computer somewhere, get people to connect to that IP, and it's as simple as that. With Steam games and stuff, I understand it's a bit hard if the only thing you got it running on is Steam multiplayer. That's a bit hard. But because they're like PUBG runs over lots of different infrastructure, like they have Xbox and they have Steam, so it's obvious that the multiplayer part is taken out of the core game, so it works on different systems. So there's no reason they couldn't do this type of stuff. They just don't want to.
Yeah. Mm. That's where the money thing comes back into it.
Oh, Bluehole, from everything that I can see, cares so much more about money than their product. Like, their product is mostly store-bought assets from the Unreal store, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Unreal? No, I think it's Unreal, not Unity. And, like, they just wanted to put a game together, quickly get money. And every action that they've done since then just tells me they want money. More so than EA. Like, I've never seen, not never, but like in a long time, I don't think I've seen one company be so aggressive about greed.
Hmm.
Which is.
I'd agree with that. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like, it is like that with, you know, pretty much any industry. There's always capitalism somewhere. And, you know, if they're pretty much like, oh, you know, we're not going to do the thing, but money is involved, so maybe we will do the thing.
Yeah.
And that's all it comes down to. It's like, how much interest is there? How much money can we make? Is it cost viable? Yes, do it. You know, they won't do it if it's not cost viable and it's going to benefit them at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Unless they're an awesome dev, which there are devs out there that do awesome things. Especially if they have the money.
Occasionally.
Yeah. I mean, they're few and far between, but they do it.
Yeah, that's where the passion and direction come back into it, right?
Yes.
You know, where do I want this to go? Am I willing to spend the money? Yes, cool, I'm doing it. Let's make people happy.
Nintendo's actually really good for that. They get a lot of stuff wrong, but like as far as their actual games go, they never ruin their game with like getting money. It's always...
That's true.
The game comes first. Their systems, their like everything outside of the game might be to do with making money, but like when they develop a game, they give it to like whichever developer they want and they're like, make this something that makes people want to buy our console.
Yeah.
And as far as I can tell, they have succeeded with that amazingly.
Yeah, well, at least they're they did confident really well. Enough in the game itself that it will be...
Like, you can't say any first-party Nintendo game, you're like... Oh, they did that for the money.
Yeah, they clearly just wanted to try and get your money. Like they thought also like no microtransactions and stuff. They're obviously confident enough in the game that it will get good enough reviews and be good enough that people will go out and buy it and continue to go out and buy it and continue to go play it.
I think the first microtransactions they've done is on the Switch possibly, and it is full expansions. From what I can see, someone can correct me on this on Twitter if they want. But I haven't seen any of like the terrible microtransaction culture in their games.
Yeah, I mean, they have their store, but it's not like a... Yeah, you're it's not paid in-game to purchasing.
No. Even the Nintendo game that... The Pokemon one, the free one, you can get... microtransactions to make things go faster. What I don't have a problem with, it never takes away the timers. So they put timers in to stop you playing the game forever. Even if you buy the upgraded version of it, there's still timers. It just makes them a bit faster so you can play a bit more.
Wait. What one are you talking about?
The Pokemon, like, Minecraft-y looking game.
Oh, the one on the Switch?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So, like, they're just like... Because they've always been, like, about... making good experiences over that stuff. So the game's free, so I'm okay with them there being a a thing that you buy to make it a bit faster, I guess.
Yeah.
I never even got to the point where I needed to buy something, so.
You've already given up on it?
No, I just like, because it resets every day, your timers, and I don't play enough because I play on the train when I do play. It's not enough for me to hit that wall.
I thought you meant you hadn't gotten far enough into the game that the timers were so long.
No, because the timer never gets longer, ever. It's just.
Oh, that's handy.
Yeah, every day you can do these tasks for this long.
Okay, fair enough.
Like, it's very. It doesn't seem like they're doing it to make you buy stuff because, one, you can't buy stuff to do it. You can get one or two upgrades, and once you've gotten them, that's it. You can't go higher. It's very much, it seems like, we don't want you playing this all the time. Go out and
have a life. Yeah, I'm going to say, it's very, like, limiting on your playtime, but yeah. I'm guessing that's what they want.
I think it is. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's very Nintendo. Endless Legend. So these devs, before they went on there, they have like a 10-day break every year where the company just shuts down and it seems to be mid-year, like midsummer or wherever they are. And just before their 10-day, they're like, all right, we're releasing this new game. It's called Endless Legend Inferno. See you in 10 days. Really liked that announcement. But now that they've come back, it's coming out August 2nd, so that's pretty soon.
It'll be on PC. Like 2 days.
I know.
2 days.
I like it when someone announces a game and then it's coming out like super soon. I just really like that.
It's like, surprise, hope you've got money.
Yeah, so yeah. It's a 4X game, kind of like Civ and the other Endless Legends or Age of Wonders. It's, from the story trailer I saw, it's about humans being rescued from the planet to be taken to another one, and you're trying to colonize and win that planet, I guess, to claim as your own.
Mm.
It I think it'd be pretty fun. I do like those 4X types of games. I understand they are not for everybody, but that's fine. Not every game is, and not every game should try to be, because that's bad.
I mean, watching the trailer, I mean, this is the one thing that always bugs me with just about everything is if, especially with games, like if I can't see a small ounce of gameplay in the trailer, it's highly unlikely I'm interested in it. Like, I want to actually be able to go, right, is it this theatrical trailer or is it legitimate gameplay? If there's no legit gameplay, I don't want to watch it.
I think they're very much targeting the people they know already like the Endless Legend series.
Yeah.
And those people know what the game's going to be like.
At the same time, though, like, that's going to be a very, like, niche area of, like, you know, group of people. You know, surely you'd be like, oh, well, we know these people like it, but, you know, let's just not give enough information for newcomers.
But,
you know, and
I do get that. Yeah. But companies like the people that make Stellaris, Paradox Interactive, and the people that make Endless Legend, I can't remember their name, like, they are a very niche market. They are more about making a product that this certain group of people like and doing it well than making a game that they want lots of new people coming in all the time. Mm. They're more about.
Yeah.
Satisfying their market rather than trying to sell to everybody, because they're not like EA and stuff where they're like, okay, what can we do to make even more people play FIFA? We'll add trading cards so people that don't even like soccer might play.
Yeah.
Those Magic the Gathering people, they seem to be doing well.
They like the cards.
So, and like things like Call of Duty, like how it's trying to be Battle Royale now. Like, the people that want to play Call of Duty probably don't want to play that now because that's not why they play Call of Duty.
Yeah.
So it's all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah. That's that. Another game that is has just come out, actually. Banner Saga 3. That looks good.
That really does interest me, actually.
We haven't played it. We want to play one first, but from what I've heard of anyone who's played it is an amazing, beautiful game with an amazing soundtrack. Soundtracks do a lot for a game. I've noticed that with Octopath Traveler, actually.
Mm.
So
I remember watching that. Really do love a lot of turn-based strategy games, and seeing that, I'm like, oh, it's shiny, oh, it's pretty, and hey, look, there's gameplay in the trailer. I immediately want to buy this and play it. And I haven't played like one or two, And I would be more than happy to just to jump to 3. It looks that good.
Yeah, but it seems it very much is, they call it a trilogy, not a, like, this is three separate stories.
Yeah, so it's definitely a follow-on, so you got to work your way through to get the full benefit.
I am sure there's stuff at the start to tell you what happened, but I think it's one of those... You've
got to venture it.
Well, they haven't really changed much of it. Like, it has enhanced, but it's not the same as The Witcher 1 versus The Witcher 3.
No, that's what I'm saying. She's going to have to witcher it. She's just going to have to bite the bullet and play the first 2 games.
Yeah, fair enough.
So she can get to the good one.
Yeah, probably. But all right. Looks good. I'm keen, very keen.
Yeah, for those who don't know, it's a strategy game, but you're a traveling... It's kind of like you're a traveling card of Vikings going through the world, making decisions and trying not to die and all that stuff. So it's pretty good. Let's go on to Jay Pinkerton, writer for Portal 2, TF2, Left 4 Dead, other Valve titles, has returned to Valve. Does anyone think this is a good thing? Does that mean he thinks there's hope in the company to make a game? Or did they just pay him lots of money?
Has his career hit a nosedive?
No, I think I think he's definitely one of the people that could, like, put his resume anywhere and get a job.
Fair enough.
If he's going back there, either there was a bucket of money that is, not reported on your tax, or they promised him, like, we are working on this game. We want you to do the writing for it. We want to finish it. I think that's less likely.
Or C, they're desperate for a really good release that's awesome, and they're like, hey, we have money. Come back and help us, please. We miss you.
They do not have the management structure to make a good game anymore.
And that maybe is why he's back.
Well, no, like, because he won't be a manager. Their whole thing is no one is a manager. Everyone's kind of equal, and when you make games as equals, you know, all that shared vision makes a good game. And while I agree to that to a certain extent, I think they've taken it too far, and now they just don't make games because too many people disagree.
Yeah, they're going to be like, okay, everyone's equal, but everyone listen to Jay.
Yeah, pretty like, much.
Everyone has a say, but, you know, whatever Jay says.
I don't think it's going to be like I wish it was like that. I doubt it's going to be.
Yeah.
It's a strange company.
I mean, he's decided to come back for a reason.
Yeah.
So
I think it's the bucket of money.
Interesting to say. Honestly, it could be multiple things, really. I mean, he could have like this amazing thing that he wants to do, and he'd be like, right, who's going to do it? Nah, I haven't got anything for anyone. I'm going to take
these
guys.
From what I understand, the developers there, if you're actually a Valve developer, not just another company getting paid by Valve, you can decide what you want to work on. And working on things that are already successful is better because you get bonuses based on how successful things are. So risking going to a new IP just isn't wise for employees of Valve, which is why I think they've stemmed to this, like, nothing's come out in so long because they just
desperate.
They've done this. They've made a culture where doing new things
isn't good,
risky and not good for your career, which in a lot of times naturally that is the way, but they've like enhanced it to so much more, which is unfortunate.
Yep.
Well, I guess we'll find out fairly soon what's happening, and
we'll be dead.
yeah
probably. Valve time is a long time.
Yeah.
Good old that. One more game before we finish up, but Kingdom of the Dump. It's a 2D, really beautifully animated. It's a 2.5D ish. Like, it's not 2.5D, but they kind of give that whole depth perception kind of thing in it. I'm not actually sure what the story's about. It didn't show much besides.
My understanding is that you are a knight that is a garbage can, and you have to free the 5 kingdoms from the grasp of evil. That is my understanding of it.
Yeah, so that's a very broad story.
Yeah, cool. Right.
Yeah, it did look vague.
I think it's purposely vague, though. I think it looks like they've put enough effort into the art that I doubt they like left out effort in the story. Unless it was like five artists that cut together and were like, let's make a game. Anyone know how a story goes?
No.
The story you could be a garbage stuff. Can. Yeah, garbage can. No one's done that before.
Seems legit.
No, but I think from what I saw of the trailer, the effort they've put in, they're probably, if they're staying vague on the story, it's probably because they want people to experience when it comes out, which I'm happy for. That's always a nice thing.
It's actually like not, it's not too vague, but it's really not in depth. Like this is from the website, which is quite empty, I must say. Lots of negative space. But basically, join the trash can knight, Dustin Binsley, as he fights his way through the 5.5 kingdoms of the dump. Rescue trash-picked king, defeat the totally disgusting toxic gremlin army, and prevent the lands of Phil from an all-out war. And you also have a friend called Ratavia. So you can naturally assume that that is a rat.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically you go through dangerous dungeons, face off fierce and filthy foes, and build a party. I think the cool thing is you can actually play five different characters as opposed to the typical one. So yeah, I don't know whether you start off as the main character and then when you build your crew, you play as five characters. But yeah, apparently it's I don't know, I guess it's similar from what I can see in a layout to like a standard JRPG.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got like a lot of different elements to it, which is pretty cool. But it still has turn-based strategy, which
with
I like.
The trash overlay theme.
I like that. Yeah. It's different.
Yeah.
And I'm all for. I'm not in. I don't like different for different sake. But when you find something that hasn't been done before, or at least not done well before, and you're like, we can make this our thing. Making trash your thing is.
I don't know that this isn't that this isn't definitely different for different sake. Feels.
I think.
It's not like this is an untapped genre. Let's put it that way.
The untapped genre of trash.
Yeah.
Nah, I think, I mean, from what they've got, it's mostly about exploration, solving puzzles, like banding together to defeat foes. I mean, it's really quite typical of the JRPG genre. But yeah. I think the one cool thing is that when I do play JRPGs, the one thing that does pest me a lot is that, like, oh, I'm just going to happen through this field. Oh, look, a random encounter.
Yes.
Apparently, with this one, you can actually see what you're coming up against, so you can choose to engage it or not.
Oh, that's which is kind of cool. I like that. Yes,
I do like that.
Yeah, because I hate surprise things when I'm at like no HP and I'm trying to get back to town.
Yeah,
to heal.
And you're like just you get to like a dead end and you're trying to figure out which way to go. And all you're trying to do is just like walk back and forth and figure something out, and it's just like attack after attack.
That's actually something I really liked about Pokemon. They always designed it so you got the random battles only in the grass, and you had to go through the grass areas going to the point of interest you needed to go to. But on the way back, you could always jump down the like little cliffs, so you didn't fight on the way back unless you wanted to.
Yeah,
that was actually, now that I'm thinking about it, cleverly designed.
Yes,
I mean, similar with one game that I play, Legend of Heroes Trail in the Sky. It's a similar thing. Like, you can actually see the enemies on screen, but you don't know what their mechanics are. You don't know what path they're going to take. So you could be sort of going, oh, well, I'm going to run around this way so they can't get me. And they can just dash at you straight away. So it's technically not a random battle, but you don't know what their animation path is. So it can still be, you know, a random encounter at the same time. Yeah. I do like that about the combat for that. It's quite nifty.
That's fair enough. All right. I think we've covered enough this week. So, Cinebay, where can people find you on the internet and stuff?
Don't. No, you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/HeyCinebay. You can find me on Twitch. No, that's just the display name, but it's actually Hey Cinebay.
Oh, there you go. I know
you
it
can
was
find me.
The same.
You can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/HeyCinebay. Apart from that, I generally float around, wafting on the breeze.
Don't we all? What's everyone been playing this week before we head off?
I started Zelda
Twilight
Princess.
Yep. That's I like that one. I don't like Skyward Sword. I played. I don't
think anybody does.
I played it begrudgingly. I actually got through it because I'm like, I can't not finish a Zelda game, which is not the feeling you want when you play a game. Yeah,
that's not what they're going for.
So, it's like, I don't like this, but I have to play it.
Yeah.
What I didn't like about it is they did introduce some new concepts, but they really forced them upon you.
Mm.
And, like, the whole flying thing and the motion controls with it was very,
Fair enough.
It was okay. But Breath of the Wild, really good. Minus the weapon system.
Not talking about Breath of the Wild, but brilliant. Glad to know.
No, I did it in order. Twilight Princess, Skyward Sword, Breath of the Wild.
Oh, okay. You just kind of like jumped.
Yeah. That's all good. What have I been playing? So I have been mostly working on the Keskast game, actually. I haven't been playing too much. So I'll be streaming more game dev tomorrow night. What else have I played? Oh, I've been playing some City Skylines after a friend of ours at work decided to bring it up, and I'm like, damn it, I feel like playing. and I've been playing some Pokemon on my Switch.
There you go.
Cinnabon, how about you?
I've just been playing my usual crack cocaine of Rainbow Six Siege, as usual.
Yeah, you guys love that, and I don't see the appeal.
It's just when you have a team of people and you have really, really good communication and tactics, it's just absolutely mint. Also,
so you're explaining Dota to
like,
us.
Yeah, I'm going to say it sounds a lot like Dota. It's just like when everything's perfect, it's amazing.
But most of the time, exactly, it's trash. It's usually when you've got people on cameras doing their call outs, people are dying and squealing, and some of it's just absolutely hilarious. And then sometimes every now and then we get in a custom game and we challenge the other team to a knife fight, and it's hilarious.
Okay.
That is
Everyone loves a knife
fight. Apart from that, it's been Conan Exiles lately as well. I finally jumped on the bandwagon. Yes and no. So the reason I find it good, I love like sandbox survival games. Like I managed I punched like over 100 hours into 7 Days to Die. It's still in alpha, mind you, for like 6 years. I still managed to put in like over 100 hours in the space of a few months, and I just absolutely loved it. But I just stopped playing because I'm just like, what's the point? You just survive, whereas the difference with Conan is that you ideally want to migrate north as much as possible, but there's always so much to do. Like, I've gone from seeing a little village go from a village to what looks like multiple mansions on a hilltop and bridges and slaves, and it's really quite extensive, and the tech tree is what really gets me. The tech tree is just... Oh, God, it's frustrating, but I love it. So I think I'll probably easily pack in another 100, 200 hours into this game easily when I have time. Sure.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's good. People enjoy games. I can't get into survival games, mostly because of the time commitment. I like a good story.
Stories are nice.
I've wanted to get into the idea of survival games for a long time, but I've slowly come to accept that I need a good story. And I'm okay with that now.
I have to admit, stories are like a really good thing. That's why when I picked up this game, I'm like, so what are we meant to do? It's like, go north. I'm like, cool, what's north? I don't know.
Good stuff.
It's Game of Thrones, the game.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's go away from the north, isn't it?
Yeah, they want down.
But there's heaps of stuff to do, though. That's what I like, is that you're never not able to do something.
That's pretty good.
I feel like going out hunting. I feel like going out and fetching slaves. I feel like taking on this fort. There is heaps of stuff to do, but again, if there's no story, it gets pretty old pretty quick.
Fair enough. All right, that's it for this week. So I have one exciting piece of news. The intro that you would have heard at the start of this, which none of us did because we didn't record it with it, but it's by Edward Hund from Thunderplaws. If you want him to do anything, please go see him. I'll leave a link in the description. He is a beautiful musician. You can catch us on Keskast.com or twitch.tv/Keskast or twitter.com/Keskast. Anywhere really Keskast. We do daily YouTube videos and we do weekly streams on Monday and Wednesday. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and thanks, Cinebay, for joining.
Thank you.
Oh, good. Thanks for having me.